from KQED.
You're listening to Forum. I'm Mina Kim. Are you noticing more one-child families? Pew Research Center reports the proportion of mothers who had one child doubled from 11% in 1976 to 22% in 2015. And the Washington Post says it's the fastest-growing family unit in the U.S. So what's behind that trend, and what's it like to be an only child these days, especially against the backdrop of stubborn old stereotypes that we've had about only children? And Lauren Sandler, our guest, knows them well. She's a journalist and author. She wrote One and Only, The Freedom of Having an Only Child and the Joy of Being One. Welcome to Forum, Lauren Sandler.
Thank you.
We're also joined by Carl Pickhart. He's a psychologist in private counseling and public lecturing practice in Austin, Texas. Good morning, Carl Pickhart.
Hi, good to be with you. Hey, Lauren.
Hi, Carl.
Oh, it's good to hear your voice.
Oh, well, I'm glad we're bringing us all together to talk about this. Right. And, you know, Lauren Sandler, I mentioned the stubborn old stereotypes, which are pretty entrenched in our culture, though maybe with the growth in only child families, those are starting to disappear a little bit. But what are they? What have the perceptions of only children been?
Well, we all tend to think of only children as selfish and as maladjusted, as having poor social skills and definitely being lonely. But I am hoping that those stereotypes are starting to fade a bit. When I wrote my book, oh gosh, Carl, I think I was sitting in your office in 2012 and my book came out in 2013.
Right.
You know, and we were having very different conversations about motherhood, even that recently, and about who women needed to be and what women's choices should or could look like. And I am hoping that as the conversation shifts, as we start thinking about childcare and family policy and a different sort of citizenship and engagement, finally, in a different way, that these tired old ideas about the single child family are shifting with them.
Well, talk about some of the interactions that you have had as somebody who, I know you are an only child as well, but as somebody who has chosen to have one child, with just random people, say, in the grocery store at events.
I mean, it really is. It's the strangest thing. So there you are with your kid who, you know, can be 2 years old, can be as young as that. I mean, I would have really had to get on the stick pretty quick to make another one. And even at that age, people start saying, so when are you having your next one? Oh, you're not going to have just one, are you? With this look of pity, this look of derision. And now that my child, I mean, I think she was four when this book came out, and now I need Carl's book on adolescence for her. Now that she's that age, the idea that this is some sort of completed choice, I mean, it's really something that deeply disturbs people. There are a lot of people who seem to feel like it's very much their business to interject and say to me, how could you do that to her? Don't you care about her having family? What happens when you die? I mean, total strangers saying things like this on the subway to me. And it's hard to think of any other sort of family choice, or for many people, not a choice, just circumstance, that could lead to that sort of interruption or judgment from complete strangers.
And even though, you know, you describe it as, yes, of course, something that you do not take to heart, does it affect at all or put any stress on you when you think about raising your child? Does it affect you a little bit to have those interactions?
The interactions, sure, and then also just, you know, the little voices that get in your head, or when, you know, when you spend time with a family where the siblings are actually getting along and everyone seems really happy and the parents talk about how the kids play with each other all the time and my daughter Dahlia looks at me enviously and scornfully. I mean, of course this stuff gets in, but I do think that we all, in all aspects of our lives, make choices, and this is just a choice, and we accommodate it like we accommodate other choices. This one just seems to be pricklier than most to people.
We're talking about what it's like to be an only child or raise an only child. We're talking with Lauren Sandler, journalist and author, One and Only, The Freedom of Having an Only Child and the Joy of Being One, and Carl Pickhart, psychologist in private counseling and public lecturing practice in Austin, Texas. And I want to open the phone lines now because I have a feeling we have quite a few listeners who'd like to weigh in with your experiences of being an only child or choosing to have one child, or maybe maybe you're a partner or friend to an only? And does that factor into the way you two relate to each other? Do you bring it up in your relationship? Are you pondering what it would mean if you and your partner chose to have one child, or if you yourself decided that you wanted to have a child? Number 866-733-6786. 866-733-6786. Post your comments on our website, kqed.org/forum, on Facebook, tweet us at KQED Forum, or email us at forum@kqed.org. Anne says, I would get the you're spoiled, and it was tricky at the start of my parents' separation. I was young and didn't have a sibling to confide in. And Stacy tweets, being an only child made me very imaginative, but it also made me feel very lonely. And sometimes, like, I didn't feel like I belonged. I had imaginary friends and started doing artwork from a very young age. Carl Picard, you've looked at this as a psychologist. Can you talk about some of the things that you've learned about what you've deemed as both the advantages and disadvantages of being an only?
Yeah, I think the variable here is family composition. And does family composition make a difference in terms of the dynamics? Absolutely. A dual parent family functions differently than a single parent family, a biological family differently than a step family, a single child family differently than a multiple child family. I think the problem comes when we start, taking those differences and evaluating them in negative ways. Mm-hmm. There are definitely, seems to me, advantages and disadvantages, any way you go. I think the for the only child family, I think the advantages are profound in many ways. I mean, number one is you do have that self-focus and self-time, and you learn to keep yourself good company. I work a lot with adolescents, and one of the things most only children I see is that they have a fairly high immunity to peer pressure because they're not willing to sacrifice what isn't good for them for the sake of going along. They tend to be verbally and socially precocious, and they have a great advantage from this because they are very comfortable interacting with adults and speaking up to grown-ups, and they tend to have very high esteem and achievement motivation, and they feel, well attended to and supported. So all of that is, on the positive side. I mean, there can be disadvantages in terms of, certainly you can say, well, I never had siblings, so I never really learned much about sharing and taking turns, and maybe I don't do that well in conflict, and maybe I'm used to putting my wants first because there are no competing wants on the table, or, and then, of course, I work with adolescent stuff, and so the adolescence very often can be delayed with only children because the attachment to parents and being a child is so strong that differentiating and detaching can be harder to do, but it still unfolds sometimes in a more delayed fashion. Also, sometimes I think the only child family system tends to be a high-striving system in the sense that you have parents really doing their best for the child and the child really doing their best for the parents, and there's this kind of a high expectation and high expectation of return. So that there's, there's that also to be contended with. But there are so many variables.
Yes, you've laid out quite a few. And Lauren Sandler, I'm wondering about this question of expectations. I've heard this before that children can often feel like that there may be very high expectations on them. They might absorb that. Did you, as an only kid?
In certain ways, sure. And I think that my kid does too. But it's interesting, there's a good body of research. And Carl, I'm trying to remember if this is something that we've talked about too, that shows that only children actually put more pressure on themselves than parents put on them.
Absolutely.
Because of this dynamic. And I'm really seeing that with my daughter right now.
Really?
But to me, these are just variables to be aware of and conscious of, like any other sort of family formation. You have same-sex parents or divorced parents or three kids or one kid with a disability or, they're just different dynamics that we roll with as we make our best and most active choices. But this is one that seems to get really personal to people. It's this question of, well, your kid isn't going to be okay, and not, well, the structural larger issues around making families and making adulthood in the U.S. isn't really okay. So if we're making choices to accommodate various inequalities, various limited resources, all of the realities of the world that we bring kids into, how is it that the emphasis is always on a child's psychology, which is frankly one of the things that I think tends to be more manageable? We have conversations to have about that. We have awareness. We have control often of how we choose to raise kids in our family. What we don't have control of is family leave or paid childcare or the motherhood tax in our workplaces or what it means to live an adulthood that isn't quite the one of freedom and engagement that we might have imagined. Mm-hmm. And I think that it's hard to always detach these conversations and make it all about whether a kid is okay and whether parents are good or bad parents for having just one kid.
Well,
of course we want our kids to be okay, but this all is part of it to me.
And our listener Noelle is bringing that in as well. Noelle writes, it's not just an individual choice. It's a reaction to lack of support in this country. There's no government-subsidized childcare system, not enough paid family leave. What are some of the other systemic or cultural shifts that have led to one-child families?
Well, people are definitely are definitely waiting later to have children, and the families tend to be smaller.
Yes.
And the decision not to have a child is also increasing, and that's, I think, a function of, you know, a lot of economic realities and the fact that, you know, I think the rate of divorce and the reality of divorce has slowed the rate of marriage down, because now people are taking more time to consider whether they want to, you know, make that commitment or not. By the time they get around to it, one child is enough. And I think that's, I don't know, and maybe Lauren can speak to that. There's some kind of thinking that the more children you have, the more family there is, or if you just have one family, you don't have family enough. I mean, all it takes is, from what I've seen, to make a family is one parent and one child. Mm-hmm. That's a family.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, whether you have another partner or whether you have you know, additional kids, that doesn't make it any more of a family.
Yes. Well,
and I also think that there are plenty of people who would say without a kid, just two partners together,
yes,
makes a family.
Absolutely.
Too.
Absolutely.
And I think that's really something that people are starting to internalize, and therefore parenthood isn't just the automatic that it used to be. And I think that's very related to our delayed fertility, I think, is related to a number of things. It's, you know, what it actually means to develop enough resources so that you feel secure having a kid in the world in terms of what you can afford, you know, how stable your home is, et cetera. But I think there's also this idea that we want to live fulfilled lives and we want to do meaningful work and have fun and be engaged in the world. And so the responsibilities of parenthood are less appealing at earlier ages. So we wait. And by the time we choose parenthood, potentially, we kind of know what it means to have a more fulfilled adult life than I think a lot of previous generations may have, of the idea that if you go to college, maybe you graduate and you immediately have a baby. If you don't go to college, maybe you graduate high school and immediately have a baby. This idea that, you know, it's your route to adulthood is through parenthood, and it's automatic, and especially for women, it's mandated. And the assumption is that you will be a mother first, you will be a mother more than you will be anything else, and you will be happy with that. And I think that we are finally saying, wait a minute, but I also have to work, and I'm also doing this second shift, and I also, you know, want a life that isn't so much on a thread all the time. And I think that there's a real cultural shift that links, you know, the policy that we have, which is pretty rotten, although finally we're having some very different conversations as recently as this week about childcare, thanks to Elizabeth Warren. And certainly Kirsten Gillibrand and Rosa DeLauro have been talking about family leave in the House and Congress for a few years now in a new way. I mean, these are real shifts that I think you can't fully disconnect from a parent's own personal life or from what a child's life will be.
Well, we've got a lot of listeners who'd like to join the conversation, and I'm going to start with Stevie in San Francisco. Hi, Stevie.
Hi. Thanks for taking my comment. I will bring up something that played into my decision to only have one child, and it's maybe not one that many people think of, but ours is very planet-driven in terms of limited resources. Humans obviously take up a lot of resources on the planet, and children take up a lot of resources on the planet. And making that even smaller, just like within our own family, you know, it's very, very expensive to live. Definitely in San Francisco, but I feel like it's increasing throughout the country. And I don't know how I would have any quality of life if I had another child. I don't know how we would afford it, because unless you are living in a place where you have one parent who can support the entire family while you're working, while your child is young, the cost of childcare is an incredible burden. And I mean, unless you have grandparents that are maybe around as well, but we did not have that. So that's my comment.
Well, Stevie, thanks. And certainly Stevie is not the first person that I've heard say that their thoughts about the environment, the resources that we take up, as well as concerns about bringing a child into a sense of instability with climate change, is also giving people pause when they think about having additional children. Eric in San Jose, join the conversation.
Hi. So thanks for having me on. I'm a single child myself, and it's weird to just the language of the conversation, like only child. It could seem like it's like a stigma in a way. And oddly enough, like growing up, I guess there was a bunch of other kids in my school that, you know, just single kids, you know. But it wasn't until going to college, people would be like, are you an only child? I'd be like, how can you tell? So it was kind of a funny experience. But I think some ways the language around it, like I had a family, the number of kids that my parents were going to have wasn't going to change my privilege and the family structure that I have. So I never felt like I didn't have stuff. And being a, you know, single child, it grew me into an adult, very confident and being able to just do anything, especially on my own. Like doing things alone, dinner, movies, whatever. It was like, yeah, just go do it. You're hungry. Go see the movie. Go do it. But the conversation just around language and how we do it, because it feels like, you know, hey, you've been spoiled and you've had all this stuff and, you know, I'm not looking for more attention, certainly. I've had plenty in my life. But,
well, Eric, you know, I'm so glad that you're bringing in this question of language, because I think there have been some attempts to try to change it from only to single or one or just something that's a little bit less focused on that. But Lawrence Andler, your book is called One and Only, The Freedom of Having an Only Child. What do you think about that term only and what it suggests or alludes to?
Oh, I really struggle with this as a writer and as an only child myself. I totally agree that there's a stigma to it and that we don't have better language. And in my book, I say only children. I say onlys. I say singletons. It all sounds lousy to me. But it's one of these things where, the words only child are fine. It's just all of this meaning that has clung to it over time. And if we can renorm what it means to be an only child, it won't be such an issue. But Eric, I feel you. And I was also comment.
Yeah. There's something.
Go on, Carl.
I don't know, mentioned earlier, but there's, for some reason, there's a pejorative that's attached to being only. And I don't know whether it rhymes with lonely or it whatever it is, but it's like, and also the notion that, you know, if you're an only child, you're the only chance of parenting your parents get. It's almost like, you know, I think this is a neat question. I think the pejorative of only is that in some ways it is translated into less than. And that's not true.
Well, April writes, only children lonely? No way. I'm an only child who grew up far from other families with kids, and I always entertain myself with thoughts, wonder, stories, and such. I am never lonely. Jordick writes, being an only child can mean you're fully exposed and trapped if you're raised by a mentally unstable parent. And Lena tweets, I coped with my loneliness through my imagination. I'd fall into books and play, make-believe, and yes, I had an imaginary friend or two. I'm lucky that I got such amazing one-on-one time with my grandparents who helped shape me beyond my years. So yes, certainly experiences differ, but loneliness does seem to come up quite a bit, whether to say that it is not an experience of being an only child.
I think the message just needs to be that only is not less than.
Mm-hmm.
You know, only is,
but
is,
for,
is only is sufficient.
But for only kids who are feeling lonely, or if you feel concerned that your child is lonely, I mean, what are some ways to address that, Lauren Sandler?
Well, I mean, you send your kid to school. You make sure that there right. are lots of opportunities to do after-school right. activities and weekend right. plans. And, you know, you make sure that there are other people around, which right. to me is very doable. But frankly, loneliness is part of the human condition. And, I don't want to say that only children are never lonely. I do think that everyone gets lonely. And for only children, it's very simple to say, I'm lonely because I'm an only child. There's also the experience of loneliness with another person. And I think that you can have loneliness with siblings as well. I think the whole point is that there's a whole range of experiences. This is certainly what we're hearing from everyone who's writing in, and definitely what I found in my years of reporting on this is there is no one experience of being an only child. There's no one way of doing it. There are so many different factors, whether you live in a rural area, whether you have a stay-at-home parent, whether, you know, you feel engaged in a social world, whether you're someone who likes solitude and finds being alone to be comforting. These things are all so varied. But
yes.
I do think because of the stigma, it becomes a real totalizing narrative where because one is an only child, that is then the thing that explains everything about someone. In the same way that, you know, let's say you have an alcoholic parent, or let's say, you know, you're a math whiz, or there are so many different variables that become the reason that you are who you are. And this one seems to overwhelm so many of them.
Yeah, I think the motto needs to be, for heaven's sakes, you know, don't be guilty, be grateful. The notion that somehow you should be beating up on yourself because you decided to have a single child just doesn't make any sense.
Well, let's hear from Nancy in Berkeley next. Hi, Nancy.
Hi. I'm 80 years old, and I was an only child, and I hated it. There was a lot of conflict between my parents, and there was nowhere in my house that I could go for comfort or companionship or something as a, you know, to take, you know, solace against these parents who fought all the time. And that's the reason I decided to have two children. I'm not sure it worked out all that well, but and I'm married to a man who is one of six. And he says, you know, he always jokes with me that, well, you know, you are an only child, and you know, I don't share very well. And I had imaginary horses. And one thing was that I became, you know, quite a reader. I read all the time, which I still do, and I did have a lot of opportunities from, you know, to concerts and plays and summer camps and things like that, which I don't know if that would have been true if I had brothers and sisters, but
Nancy,
I didn't like being an only child.
Well, Nancy, thanks for sharing your experiences. And I hear that, too, that people explain sort of relationship dynamics in terms of whether or not they were an only child or not. Do you see it changing, Carl Picard, in terms of how much people use whether or not you were an only child as sort of an overwhelming determining factor, as Lauren Sandler was describing, for so many things about who you are? Do you think that that is changing, or do you think it's still really entrenched?
I don't think people are saying, because I am an only child, I am different in ways that get in my way. You know, I think that, you know, people are you know, they factor in the fact that they're a single child, but that's within a larger context than the dynamics of the family. Like that caller said, you know, she's an only child, but that's the factor that's going on is the discord between the parents and how they're acting it out. You know, and if you had, even if you had siblings in the family, you know, that stressor would still be there.
Mm-hmm.
Really feel for Nancy, and I've heard that from a lot of people. And to me, it just feels like I feel terrible that her parents weren't careful and intentional about how to raise an only child. And I think that once we start renorming this conversation and thinking about how to most support kids without siblings, then there's a shift there. In the same way that if we can renorm this conversation in terms of putting the onus on what it means to have children one at a time instead of the assumption that, you know, families are sort of fully formed in multiples, I especially think that with an eye towards the environment, it's very strange to me that the mistake is to have one instead of thinking, okay, let's think about the environmental factors of every American, especially, that is birthed in this country. And looking at the realities of climate change, it's always interesting to me that there's an impulse to judge people for not raising the population instead of thinking, okay, let's be cautious, let's do this right, and if you want more, great, but be intentional about it.
And just very quickly, Lauren Sandler, do you feel like it's changing, that it's shifting, especially in light of the fact that we seem to be having more one-child families? Do you feel like renorming is happening? Are you seeing evidence of
right.
that?
I mean, I did a lot of reporting in China, and it was really interesting to see how instantly, you know, the draconian, I mean, I'm not forgiving it, one-child policy renormed a huge population so quickly. So that a lot of people would say, yes, of course I want more than one child, but then they would be asked, well, what would it require? Oh, well, I'd need a different job, a different apartment. I'd need my marriage to feel better. I'd need my parents' health to be better. All of these factors would become idealized before the second one would be possible. And I do think that there's a shift in terms of accepting our limited resources within families, within an economy, within the planet, to actually think, okay, what does this mean? And simultaneously, if our policies can change, if our politics will change, I do believe that simultaneously culture leads politics and politics leads culture, and that might really make a difference.
Well, Aribi writes, being an only child is pretty fantastic. I love being doted on by my parents when I was younger. Now that I'm older, I've enjoyed having adventures with them. And this listener writes, I never felt like I was missing out as an only child. I'd lucked in that my cousins and I are pretty close in age and have always been like brothers to me. Yes, it would have been nice to have siblings to help out with my parents' health crisis, but we had an amazing tribe surrounding us. Well, Lauren Sandler, thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Thank you. It was a pleasure.
And Dr. Carl Pickard, psychologist in Austin, Texas, thanks for joining us as well.
It was fun being with you all.
And thanks to our listeners for your comments and stories, and to our KQED Forum team, Judy Campbell, Tina Lauerberg, Susan Britton, Dan Zoll, Kathleen Quillian, Amanda Stupai, Katie McMurrin, and Caroline Smith and Sam Klein-Markman are our interns. I'm Mina Kim. Have a great weekend.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation.